Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Ayush Gupta, and I'll be presenting our work on leveraging value locality in optimizing NAND flash-based SSDs. This work was done by me, along with Raghav Pisolkar and my advisors, Dr. Bhuvan Urgaonkar and Dr. Anand Sivasubramanyam at the Penn State University. In this work, we have looked at the different dimensions of value locality and how they can be used for developing a new type of SSD called CASSD, which uses content addressable storage, and the various challenges and opportunities associated with it. In this talk, I'll start off with a quick relook at locality and how a value locality fares in comparison with the other dimensions of locality. We will then see how SSDs can really leverage with this form of locality. And based on that, I will describe the design of our CASSD, that is the content addressable SSD. I will talk about the mapping structures and the metadata management policy devised by us. And finally, we'll see whether CASSD can really outperform traditional SSDs or not. Locality has been and is one of the most important pillars of storage systems and has generally manifested itself in two forms. The first is the temporal locality, which implies that if a logical address is accessed now, it is likely to be accessed again in the near future. And the second notion is that of spatial locality, which implies that if a logical address is accessed now, there's a high likelihood that addresses in its neighborhood are also going to get accessed soon. Both these forms of locality are quite pervasive in storage systems. For example, whether it's the processor caches, the buffer cache, disk cache, etc., we see them being used everywhere in the storage stack. However, there is another form of locality which is known as value locality. Value locality implies that certain content is accessed preferentially. Its benefits can be had even if the requests belong to completely different address spaces and have no temporal or spatial correlation between them in terms of the logical addresses. It has primarily been exploited in the form of data deduplication using content addressable storage. And data deduplication allows us to store a unique copy of each content while removing all the redundant content. It has been used in a lot of domains. It has been used for reducing the network traffic, for performing content-based caching, and even for improving the efficiency of data storage. Its prime examples include systems such as Venti and Foundation, which are quite prominent archival systems, and even commercial products like EMC Centera and data domain storage systems. However, unlike temporal and spatial locality, which have also been extensively used in the context of emerging devices such as NAND flash-based SSDs, we find that value locality has not been exploited. So the obvious question is, can we use value locality to address the idiosyncrasies of these SSDs? Well, in SSDs, writes are a very big bottleneck because of two prime reasons. One, because of the read-write asymmetry, whereby writes are quite slow as compared to reads on these devices. And secondly, because the writes can result in block erases, which are high latency operations, thus impacting the performance, and also have an impact on lifetime because they can cause the wear out of these NAND flash cells. CAS, on the other hand, provides data deduplication, which allows us to remove the redundant write requests from the request stream and hence have a positive impact on the performance and lifetime of these devices. This is sort of the prime motivation for us to try to use CAS along with SSDs. Furthermore, CAS provides certain challenges while in its implementation. For using CAS, we require out-of-place updates. To really see this, let's look at this example. In this example, I'm showing one-to-one correspondence between logical and physical addresses. Now, assume a write request comes to an address 123 to write a content ABC. As you can see that the content is already present on storage medium. Hence, we do not need to do any further write. We just update the mapping structures. However, now consider the case that another write comes to the same address but this time tries to write a different content. In this case, we actually have to perform a write because the content is a new content. We have to do write on the storage medium. Furthermore, we cannot update at the same location where the older address is pointing to. In this case, address 120 on the physical medium. Why? Because there are other logical addresses which are still pointing to this content. Hence, in order to write this, we have to perform an out-of-place update operation. In SSDs, we have a property known as erase before write. So flash pages can only be written once they are in a state which is known as the erase state. And as I just said, that erases are a coarser granularity operation and have higher latency So it has been shown that it is generally better to perform out-of-place writes on flash rather than in-place writes. So you can clearly see that CAS and SSDs provide this functionality of out-of-place updates quite inherently. Another issue with CAS is that it can result in loss of sequentiality. It can take a long sequential stream and break it down into smaller random requests because of data deduplication. While this can be a big issue with hard disk drives, where seek latencies are quite high, in SSDs, we see that they provide quite fast random reads. At least they are comparatively faster. And hence, even this problem can be mitigated to a certain extent. So it seems quite clear that CAS and SSDs seem to go well with each other. But should we just implement a CAS-based SSD now? Well, there's one more question which we need to look at, and that is, do real workloads actually exhibit value locality or not? Note that I'm talking about primary storage workloads in this case and not archival workloads. So to do this, we have taken three real workloads which had content information in them in the form of MD5 hashes for 4 kilobytes requests. These workloads have already been previously used in a study at FAST last year. The first workload which we have is the web workload, which represents two virtual machines, one hosting the online course management system, and the second hosting the email access portal for the CS department at Florida International University. The second workload is the mail server workload, which stores the user inboxes. And the third is the home directories of the researchers at FIU. One of the common characteristics of all these three workloads is that they are predominantly write dominant. Hence, the write performance of the device where they are stored should have a big impact on the performance of these workloads. The second characteristic is the percentage of unique read-write requests in them. So if you can see that there is a lot of duplication present in these workloads. For example, in case of the home workload, we see around 33% duplicate write requests. Well, we'll see the implication of this duplication as I described our work. Right now, let's try to analyze what can be the source of duplication in these workloads. So for example, in case of mail workload, users may be getting the same spam mail in their inboxes. Or there can be group mails with common attachments, which can result in duplication, which are sent to all the users. In case of home's workload, there can be researchers who are collaborating and hence have similar technical documents. They are running the same simulations, running the same code bases, which can again cause a lot of duplication in them. In order to characterize value locality in these workloads, we have actually defined a dimension, which is known as value popularity. Value popularity represents the number of occurrences of each unique value in a workload. It primarily signifies the potential a workload has for being deduplicated. To see this, let's look at this graph for the mail workload. In this graph, on the x-axis, I'm showing the unique values which have been sorted according to their write popularity, and on the y-axis, the cumulative fraction of write accesses. So you can clearly see there's a lot of skewness in this workload, and that says that there are some values which are highly popular than others. In fact, we observe that 50% of the write accesses in this workload can be satisfied by just 8.8% of unique values. So we can get a saving of about 41% write requests for these 50% writes. Similar trend is also observed across the other two workloads which we have, though to different extent. For example, in case of home's workload, for 50% of the write requests, we require about 30% unique values, still providing a saving of about 20%. So now I've shown that workloads actually exhibit value locality, and we have also seen that CAS and SSDs seem to go well with each other. So it makes sense to use CAS along with SSDs. With that in mind, let's now describe the design of our CSSD. In this figure, I'm showing the three components of the traditional SSD. The first is the SSD controller, where you run the FTL algorithms. And the second is the RAM, where the mapping structures, etc., are stored. And third are the flash chips, where the real data is finally stored. Apart from these three structures, in CSSD, we also require a hash coprocessor. This is primarily needed because we don't want hash computations to become a bottleneck on the performance of our CSSD. So we want to provide fast hash computations. And recently, a lot of SSDs have come about which provide inline encryption decryption facilities using encryption engines. So providing a hash should not be a difficult task. The second change which we require is the need for a persistent storage to store our mapping structures. The BB RAM here refers to the battery backed RAM. And I'll describe the need for this when I describe the mapping structures. Right now, let's just look at how write requests are handled in CSSD. When a write request arrives at the SSD controller, the content is sent to this hash coprocessor to find the hash. This hash is then used to look up the mapping structures to see whether the request is for a new content or for an existing content. If the hash is found, that is, the physical page where the content is stored will be returned, it means that we already have the content stored. Hence, we do not need to perform any more flash page write for this request. We simply update the structures and return back. In case that the hash is not found, we actually have to perform the flash page write operation because the content is a new content and we have to store it. So we do the write, update the mapping structures, and then return back. So it's quite clear that if the workloads have a lot of write requests which can be deduplicated, a SSD-based design can prove worthwhile in improving both the performance and the lifetime. So we'll see how it really goes about when I'll talk about the evaluation. Now let's see the mapping structures which we have used in our CSSD. There are predominantly two main mapping structures. One is the LPT, which maps the logical addresses to their physical counterparts on flash. This is similar to the traditional SSDs, the mapping structure present in the traditional SSDs, and we manage it at the granularity of flash pages. There are certain optimizations, as mentioned, DFTL, which can be used to reduce the space requirements for this table. The second data structure which we use is the HPT, which maps the hashes to the physical location of content on flash. This table is used during every write request to see whether the content is a new content or an existing content. Apart from these two structures, we also require a third table, which is known as the ILPT, or the inverted LPT. This table stores the list of logical addresses pointing to the same physical location, that is, all the logical addresses which store the same content. This table is primarily needed for keeping track of the valid content on flash. So whenever the garbage collector or the where leveler moves the content from one physical location to the other, this table is actually used to update the LPT. To look at it in more clearly, let's take an example. Let's assume that the garbage collector moved the physical page P1, the content at page P1, to some other location. Now, in that case, we have to update the LPT also to reflect these changes. And that is where we use this ILPT to find the location of those logical addresses in the LPT. Moreover, you can see one more thing, that in ILPT, we have a list of logical addresses. So there's an M-to-1, many-to-one relationship between logical to physical addresses, which has been formed in CSSD. In traditional SSDs, generally there is one-to-one relationship between the logical addresses and the physical addresses. And thus, you can use the spare area of the flash page to store this logical address information in traditional SSDs. And that is then used during power failure for recovery. However, in our case, since there are multiple to one relationship, we can't just store it in that spare area. And this relationship, note that, can change over time before the page actually becomes invalid. So we require some form of persistent storage for storing these LPT entries. And that is why we require a persistent RAM. There are other ways of storing it also. You can use a PCM-based memory or, as was suggested, a checkpointing-based mechanism to store this. But in our case, we are just using a battery-backed RAM. The fourth table which we use is known as the IHPT, which is nothing but the inverse of the HPT table, which I explained earlier. This table is primarily needed for improving the performance of lookup operations. And it is used whenever a value on flash becomes invalid. Now, interestingly, in traditional SSDs, a page becomes invalid whenever an update comes to that logical address. However, in CSSD, an invalidation only occurs when the value loses all its logical addresses or pointers. That is, all the logical addresses which are pointing to this value now start to point to some other values. And this value becomes useless and should be garbage collected. And when this happens, we need to remove its entry from the HPT because otherwise it's a useless entry. So to do that, we make use of IHPT table. The other way would have been to read the spare area where the hash can be stored, but that would have resulted in a spare area read operation, which is high latency operation. So using this table, which is present in the RAM, we can save on those operations also. So for example, let's assume that the content at page P3 on Flash becomes invalid. So we want to remove the entry H3P3 in the HPT. To locate it, we first look up the IHPT and then remove it from the HPT table. So now that I have explained the mapping structures, let's see how the metadata management policy works in traditional SSDs and compare it with our CSSD. In traditional SSD, as I just said, there is only one table which is present, which is LPT, and it can probably easily fit into the RAM on the SSD with certain optimizations if needed. However, in case of CSSD, we have added three more mapping structures. So now if we want to fit these tables in RAM, it's highly possible that it won't fit. So the obvious question is, how do we fit this metadata in CSSD's RAM? One technique can be to just have a larger RAM, right? But such an option may not be a scalable option, and hence we require to do something else. The other option is if we can somehow shrink these tables so that they become smaller and can now fit in the RAM on the flash. In order to do this, we have again taken use of one of the characteristics of value locality, which is known as temporal value locality. TVL implies that if a certain value is accessed now, it is likely to be accessed again in the near future, and not necessarily from the same logical address. Basically, this is quite analogous to the traditional notion of temporal locality, except that in this case, we are talking about values showing temporal locality and not logical addresses. To see this, let's look at this CDF of write requests in a, managed in a queue, which is managed using LRU policy. On the x-axis, I'm showing the position in the LRU queue, and on the y-axis, the cumulative fraction of write requests. The blue curve represents the TVL case where values are stored in this LRU queue, and the red curve represents the traditional temporal locality where you store the logical addresses in this queue. So one thing which is very clear from this curve is for this workload, the web workload, the blue curve is much more skewed than the red curve. That is, this workload shows much higher temporal value locality than traditional temporal locality. In fact, to achieve a 90% hit rate in this LRU queue, we require to store metadata corresponding to 1.3K values if we use TVL. However, if we want to use traditional notion of temporal locality, the metadata space needed increases by about 100x, more than 100x rather. So you can clearly see that we can shrink the metadata well if we use temporal value locality. So using temporal value locality, we have reduced the sizes of HPT and the IHPT tables. What we do is we only keep a subset of these entries in these tables. They're shown in the dark here. So that reduces the size of these two tables. Note that the other two tables, LPT and ILPT, are managed separately. They can be the space requirement for them can be reduced using DFTL or other such schemes. Furthermore, to make use of the TVL notion, we manage the HPT using the LRU policy. And since I have just said that we only store the subset of the entries here, and there is no other place where we are sort of maintaining a persistent copy of HPT, whenever an entry needs to be removed from this table, that is, an eviction needs to happen, we simply discard the entry. We do not perform any write back or any other thing. We simply remove the entry from this table. Please note that this does not impact the correctness of our algorithm. Why? Because HPT is a table which is only needed for performing data deduplication. So if the entry is not found in this table, we assume that the content being written is a new content and not an existing value. So there is no correctness issues. Yeah, it can result in decreasing the efficiency of deduplication. However, we have shown in the paper that even that is not the case. The most popular values actually show temporal value locality. So using this scheme now, you can see that the metadata becomes smaller and can probably fit in whatever the RAM size is on the flash. Now that I have explained the different mapping structures and the metadata management policy that we have used, let's see if a CSSD can really outperform traditional SSD or not. To do this, the performance metric that we have chosen is the average response time, which I am plotting here on the y-axis. And on the x-axis, I have the different workloads. The blue bar, the leftmost blue bar here, represents the traditional SSDs, which are non-cache-based system, while the red bars are the cache-based SSDs, which have infinite amount of RAM. That is, they have sufficient RAM to be able to store all the HPT entries. The other three bars are for constricted RAM sizes, which can store 16K, 64K, and 128K hashes, respectively. One thing which is very obvious from this is that with CAS, we are really able to reduce the average response time quite significantly. For example, for the mail workload, the response time goes down by about 84%, which is quite substantial. And even for web, we see about 65% reduction in response time. Furthermore, even if we have constricted RAM sizes, for example, 16K hashes can be stored in the HPT, we see that for the home workload, the response time improves by about 7 milliseconds, which is quite good. And also, another thing to note here is that in the case of mail workload, for 16K hashes, you can see that the improvement is not that good. There is reduction in response time. However, it's not as high as was in the case of mail workload. The home workload. And the main reason for this is that this workload shows lesser TVL than the other two. So to get the same sort of benefits, we require a bigger metadata storage for this. In fact, if we are able to store about 128K hashes, which in our case comes out to be roughly an overhead of about 3.5 MB, you see that the performance becomes quite similar to the case where we were able to store all the hashes. So it seems it's quite clear that CSSD, if workloads show write duplication, can improve their performance. So now let's try to break down the response time improvements into the constituent factors. On flash, the response time is impacted by two things. A, the total number of writes which happen on the device, and B, the total number of block erases which happen. So let's see the total number of writes in the web workload. The blue bar here represents the workload writes, which are coming from the upper workload stream. And the red bar corresponds to the GC writes. That is, those writes which happen due to copying of valid pages at the time of garbage collection. These are the ones which result in write amplification on these SSDs. One thing which you can see is that there's a lot of reduction in the workload writes, which directly comes from the fact that these workloads show value popularity and hence can be deduplicated. However, the more interesting thing is the reduction in GC writes, which for this workload reduced by about 94%, as you can see. And similar improvement is seen even if we have constricted RAM sizes. The main reason for this is that dedupe reduces valid content on flash. Because of data deduplication, a lesser number of write requests have to be done on the flash, and hence, whenever GC is called, there is lesser amount of valid content on flash compared to the invalid content. In fact, we see that around 75% reduction is seen in the number of valid pages which needs to be copied during garbage collection if we use CSSD as compared to the traditional SSDs. Furthermore, these benefits translate into reduction in total erases also, which in this case reduced by about 77%. The reason, as I just explained, is one, that we are doing lesser number of total writes, and second, that we are reducing the number of GC invocations also, because we are increasing the gap between successive GC invocations because of slower rate at which we do the writes. Moreover, the implication of this decrease in block erases is not only on the performance improvement of SSD, but also on the lifetime of the device. Because I had told earlier that erases result in a wear out of the NAND flash cells. So if we are doing lesser erases, we'll be able to improve the lifetime also. Similar observation was seen in the functions presentation also. So concluding, we have shown that workload actually exhibits significant value locality, and we have characterized it into temporal value locality and value popularity. We have shown that CAS and SSD seem to go well with each other and believe that more research needs to be done to use data deduplication along with SSDs. However, there are certain implementation challenges, especially regarding the mapping structures and the metadata management policies, which needs to be looked at before CSSD can be implemented properly. We have given one take of how to do that, and the earlier presentation gave another take at it. So on the whole, it's quite clear that using content addressability, the performance as well as the lifetime of SSDs can be really improved. Thank you. I'll take the question.
Well, very good work.
Thank you.
I have a question about your work related to this least popular replace algorithm, a cache algorithm published last year in ICTCS. You know, what is the difference? You all exploit content locality.
I'm not aware of this work, but is it in context with SSDs? The work which you are talking about last year?
It's a popular value replacement algorithm for cache management, yeah, including SSD. No. Yeah.
Okay, sorry, I'm not really aware of this work.
Hi, Jonathan Amit, IBM. Uh-huh. Wanting to ask about value locality, if you can give a real-life example on when it might happen on a real application. I know you measured it, but I'm having a hard time figuring out a sample or example that can be in real life.
So, for example, I talked about this mail workload, right? We get a lot of spam mails which we never read, but they are actually written into the inbox files or the files of the users, right? Mm-hmm. Which are, the spam mails are actually similar across the whole set of users. And the example in this was that this was an email server for a department, computer science department. So there can be a lot of mails which are going to the users, which are same mails from the admins, et cetera, which can have a lot of duplication again in them.
And then the user will access them and try to read them later on?
It doesn't matter whether they read or not, because if you saw, the workloads were primarily write dominant. Mm-hmm. So they were being written to the all the inboxes, at least. That's what we can infer from these workloads. I don't know if they must not be reading them a lot because they are write dominant.
Okay, thanks.
Mark Littlebridge, HP Labs. So what sense is value locality a sense of locality? It seems to be a shortcut for just saying the deduplication factor is above one.
I think there are two dimensions to value locality as we just saw. One is that the angle of deduplication, which we characterize using this value popularity. But there are two other dimensions, actually. One is this temporal value locality.
That's locality, but is value locality locality?
Value locality is the locality of values, right? The third dimension is spatial value locality, whereby if there are values, right, they can be, let's say, A, B, C are different three values, right? There can be a case where whenever A is accessed, B and C also get accessed together.
That's chunk locality, not value locality.
But these are values, right? That's how we see them.
Chunk locality says if you see A, B, and C one time and you see A again, you're likely to see B.
B and C.
You define it as if I see A, I'm likely to see A again, which is different.
No, that is temporal. That is one form of value locality, which is temporal value locality. The reason.
No, that's, we'll see it again recently.
Yes, and that's what we observed in these workloads. And my guess is that the reason for this is the fact that there's a huge amount of skewness in the popularity of values. So there are certain values, let's say A, which is so highly popular that after every few requests, we see A again happening. You know, request for A coming.
I think this sounds like a...
Yeah, sorry. Okay. The other thing is I just wanted to advise you should probably distinguish between dynamic deduplication and static deduplication,
okay,
as those can differ. Because in a request stream, it might be the case you're hitting a bunch of values a lot, but you're not actually writing them. And so statically, there might be a different level of deduplication.
Okay.
One more question.
My name is Dong Chulpa. I'm a PhD student in computer science at the University of Minnesota. So all of the four tables are connected with each other, right? So there are four tables to have to be updated, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so what if the power is cut down before all of the pages are...
No, that's why we are using a battery back RAM for those tables.
Oh,
what I said. One of the requirements for this SSD is the need for a battery back RAM.
Okay, can I have one more question? So do you also use the DFTL?
One at a time.
The question was, you can't update all four tables atomically. What happens if you update one and the other three don't get updated and the power dies? So the CPU doesn't have any power, I can't update it.
No, but they are all present in the battery back RAM, right? So we'll roll it back. Yeah, we have not actually explored that far. Ahead. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.